For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
So many sports are in full swing right now, so there's no better time to get into sports betting than this very second. Go to Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbooks experts. And welcome into the podcast, everybody. Jesse Cass here with another brand new episode of the Believe in Clippers podcast right here on the Believe Podcast Network. We have an amazing show for you here today as Law Murray, who covers the Clippers for The Athletic, an incredible writer. He does a great job covering the team. We're very lucky to have him on the show, so that's coming up in just a moment. Alex Acker, my co-host, will not be here this week, but we got this great conversation with Law to have you covered here on this week's episode. So really excited to bring that to you. We talk about everything surrounding the team, the recent win streak, how well they've been playing as of late, the Lou Williams, Rajon Rondo trade, DeMarcus Cousins, injuries, of course, and everything in between. So a great conversation with Law upcoming. Quickly before we get there, I want to let you know if you enjoy the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple. 5 stars is always appreciated, and we're available wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, iHeart, all over the place. We're all there. So find us wherever you can. You can also check us out at Believe.com, where this show and hundreds of other shows live on the platform. So with all of that said, we're not going to waste too much time. The Clippers playing some great basketball right now, sitting at third in the Western Conference, but right on the heels of the Suns and even the Jazz for the top two spots in the West Coast. So Clippers playing well despite a lot of injuries. They've been winning some excited shorthanded games, and they have been using their depth to their advantage. So it's been fun. We hope they can keep it up and continue, as they will have fans back in the building in their home game against Minnesota on Sunday night. That was also something we touched on in this conversation. So without further ado, here it is, my conversation with Law Murray on the Believe in Clippers podcast. Here we go. All right, we're now joined here by our guest here on the Believe in Clippers podcast. He covers the Clippers for The Athletic. He's done a great job this year. Law Murray joining us on the podcast. Law, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, thank you for having me, Jesse. I appreciate the time here.
Yeah, and it's been quite an interesting season, obviously, with a 72-game season, shortened, condensed. We've seen a lot of injuries across the league and for the Clippers in general, but all things said, they're playing their best basketball of the year. Just had their 7-game win streak ended the other night, but it seems like they're kind of clicking at the right time. What have you seen in really this past month or so where they've kind of turned that corner and both offensively and defensively kind of hit their stride?
Well, the homestand really helped them out. They had a 9-game homestand. It's really rare for a team to have that, especially in this particular season where the schedule is so compressed. It worked out for the Clippers. I mean, they had a really tough stretch going into the homestand, and they just got off of a 3-game road trip. They're back. They don't have consecutive home games again until the beginning of May. So, I mean, everyone's schedule kind of balances out in some way, and the Clippers really use it to their advantage to establish the kind of defense that they want to play. They've been missing Serge Ibaka for the past month, which they would hope to have him back before the playoffs, but in the meantime, Vince Zubac has done pretty well with the extended minutes as far as making sure that the points in the paint that they were allowing for most of February going into March, that has really flipped. They've done a really good job rebounding all season, especially on the defensive glass. What Zubac has done is give them a little bit of offensive diversity in that, in addition to all the great shooting, the few times the Clippers do miss, you have a guy who's interested in being down there and cleaning up. So that has been an underrated factor. I feel like I do need to start there because we're talking about differences. We're talking about deltas and changes. When it comes to what the Clippers do well, I mean, they are having arguably the best shooting season of all time. It gets to a point where it's like, well, you know, they get through this month and you have to really start thinking, wait, what records can they break? Kawhi Leonard, it's more than what he's doing as a shooter. He is creating plays for his teammates. One of those guys is Paul George, but Paul George has played without Kawhi for the past week. And he's been arguably, other than Stephen Curry, maybe one of the best players in the entire league with his consistent output as a scorer, as well as continuing to facilitate and make plays for others. People thought Rajon Rondo was going to come in and change a bunch of things. I mean, all Rajon Rondo has done is been a really good role player. He doesn't play a lot, but when he's in there, he's had a positive impact. So there are several factors that go into the Clippers playing really well on both ends of the floor, and really it comes down to nailing down some of the things that they've been working on all season. It's just that they've finally reached the level of consistency that they've wanted to achieve.
And for head coach Ty Lue, you know, when you have a team this talented and this deep, you're going to have to make a lot of difficult decisions, especially with rotations in the playoffs. And you mentioned how well Zubats has been playing as the starter and how the defense has really kicked it into another gear. You know, if and when Ibaka comes back, which the Clippers hope is soon, we know it's been kind of a big extended absence for him. What do you see that transition being like? We know he was the starter when he played earlier in the year. You know, do you see Zoo keeping that starting role? Do you see them going back to Ibaka? What are your best guess at what do you think they're going to do when Serge comes back?
I think it's really going to be interesting, and they could go either way. And I think Serge Ibaka is the kind of player who could go either way as well. You know, this isn't going to be as difficult a transition as, say, Marc Gasol with the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol, I use that reference mainly because those guys were teammates in Toronto for a while. They both had missed games in Toronto, not just last year, but years prior. And Mark made it clear he really wanted to start. Serge was a lot more versatile than that. Like, he had no problem coming off the bench if necessary, if it meant the best for the team. And this is a really good team. Like, this is a team that has a championship ceiling. So Serge could come back and he could volunteer like his guy, Nick Batum, or not, I wouldn't say like Nick Batum did, but some may remember when this season started that Marcus Morris saw the job that Nicholas Batum was doing in the starting lineup and suggested to Ty Lue that he should come off the bench as a way to start his season and let Batum stay in the starting lineup. Now, eventually, Marcus Morris got back into the starting lineup and Nick accepted a bench role. And that has gone really well. I could see the similar situation, a similar dynamic with Serge. Like, he's been out for more than a month, and maybe he sees what's going on and says, you know what, I'll be fine coming off the bench. I'll be in a second unit with Nicholas Batum, and that would be incredible. Or Ty could say, we signed you. We brought you here to start. You don't lose your spot due to injury. We saw Patrick Beverley miss almost 4 weeks, come right back into the starting lineup. It could go either way. And honestly, it doesn't really matter who starts. It doesn't really matter. It's about minute distribution. It's about who finishes in the few close games that the Clippers wind up playing because they blow everybody out. You know, they don't play a lot of close games.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough decision for Ty, a tough decision for the team, but one that they really don't need to think about because Serge isn't ready to come back right now anyway.
And that's something that I think is a luxury for this team, right? With the versatility that they have, we've seen, depending on the matchup, you know, Ty Lue goes small where he has Batum and Morris kind of playing the four and five, or
exactly,
you know, in bigger matchups, you can go with Zubats or Serge. So it might just be matchup dependent on where they want to go in closing lineups.
Exactly. All of this is situational. Yeah. You know, who starts is a nice little checkbox or whatever. You know, it's a way of establishing a certain type of game, because what are starting lineups there for? Starting lineups is there because you practice with those units primarily, and because you know that you're coming out the gates first 5 minutes of the game or so trying to get your best out there. You're trying to start the game a certain way. But besides that, for the most part, you're going to be, things are going to be fluid. Things are going to take the shape of the game. And even before Serge had this long layoff, he wasn't necessarily playing more than if it's a Zubats. You know, Ty wanted to see a bunch of small lineups out there. So you just, you want to have more options. That's what health is. That's what availability is. But other than that, Ty has seen, these are vets. These aren't guys new to the league. You know, it's a matter of getting in the right rhythm before the playoffs. But I don't think anyone's really tripping about anything as long as Serge can come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that this team is incredibly talented when, even when they're not fully healthy. But, you know, how much, you mentioned health and availability, how much of a concern is that just kind of leading up to the playoffs with all the nagging injuries that the Clippers have had, with knowing how talented they are? That's kind of their biggest roadblock right now in terms of developing that continuity and some of those closing lineups. How much is that a concern, and how much do you think that'll affect the Clippers going forward?
It should be a concern for every single team in the league.
Yeah.
If you're trying to make the playoffs, you're concerned about level of health. It's hit everybody. And the teams that it hasn't hit, they should be concerned. You know, the Utah Jazz, you know why they're number one seed? Because they've had one of the most stable seasons in terms of their best players being available all year. That stuff in a season like that matters exponentially. You know, Donovan Mitchell just sprains an ankle, and now we're about to see, oh, okay, Utah is not going to have this ability over the next couple of weeks to play like they have for several months. Like, it's a blessing. It's a great thing. You should credit a team, not discredit a team, for being able to keep their guys healthy and in the lineup. So the Jazz have belatedly hit a stumbling block because of Donovan Mitchell's ankle injury. When it comes to the Phoenix Suns, they've ran their starters out in full force all season. Now, one of the reasons why you have to look at that and be like, oh, that makes sense, is the first month of the season, they had a long layoff due to the coronavirus pandemic. You know, so one reason why Phoenix has done so well this season, maybe surpassed some people's expectations, not mine, but I thought they would be this good. I really did, because they are talented. But that talent has been bolstered by availability. So for the Clippers, these injuries, really, if everything goes right, everyone's going to be in okay shape going into the postseason. But what happened in the bubble last year? You had guys in and out, in addition to the pandemic that cost everybody months in the middle of a time where you're getting ready for the playoffs. You know, early March in a conventional NBA season where the Clippers had won 7 out of the last 8 games, something like that, you know, they were playing really well. You take months away, you have extenuating circumstances, all of a sudden, who are you? You know, the Clippers are trying to not have that be a factor, the quote unquote, who are you factor. Guys have sat, they've had late scratches, they've had guys in and out of the lineup, all kinds of weird lineups. But I think that they're doing a good job of saying, you know what, if you have anything, Kawhi, we'll take you off the court for a week. You know, it's not the same as last year. Last year, it was guys not knowing when players, their best players, would practice even. Everyone's on the same page. That communication, that level of, we're all in this, we all have a common goal, we all know what we're doing, we're trying to keep everyone fresh for the postseason. I think that is going to be a big difference between this year's Clippers and last year's Clippers.
And something that's been really fun and refreshing about this year's team is, despite a lot of those injuries, the whoever comes into the lineup has played well. We've seen guys just stay ready and excel in their roles. Of course, Terrence Mann and Luke Kennard, you know, some nights they won't really play. The other nights they'll start and play 30 minutes and play great. So we've seen that kind of up and down the lineup with a lot of guys who, no matter what their role is, they always seem like they're ready and willing to contribute.
Yeah, in a quote unquote full roster circumstance, Terrence Mann is the 10th guy. Luke Kennard is the 12th man.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who, I mean, Luke has been inconsistent this year in a lot of ways, especially when it comes to his aggressiveness. When he gets an opportunity, he doesn't always produce. He doesn't simply put shots up. But has Luke Kennard won them games this year? Absolutely, 100%. Has Terrence Mann won them games this year? Absolutely. And that's a dude who, he was the 12th man entering this season. Has Reggie Jackson won them games this year? He won them again this week in Detroit. This guy was not playing every day. He was the 10th guy in the rotation to start this year. that is really that's just a good sign of not just the talent and depth that's been accumulated, but also just paying it forward. If a guy has earned a way on the floor with this play, with this work, when he's not playing, with how he supports his teammates behind closed doors, as well as on the bench where everyone can see that, that stuff matters. And that's the kind of team that the Clippers have built. It's not just talent, it's continuity. It's the kind of chemistry that matters, not the kind of chemistry that everyone kind of, you know, hitches onto trying to look for ways to psychoanalyze guys. Like, it's really simple. Basketball is played by people, right? Sure. And so you need people to feel good about themselves on and off the floor. And I think the Clippers have placed a priority on that. And it's one of the reasons why the games that have been missed haven't affected them in the standings too much.
And you mentioned kind of the continuity and the good vibes around the team. And we saw DeMarcus Cousins just get his second 10-day, of course, kind of an insurance policy with Serge Ibaka still on the shelf. But one thing that I've noticed with DeMarcus, you know, he's still working his way back from injury and probably won't be a factor in terms of getting on the court come playoff time. But just in terms of being a positive presence in the locker room, obviously he knows Rondo well. Seems like he gets along really well with Kawhi and Paul George, just kind of adding to the, you know, the chemistry of this team, which we know at times was an issue last year, but it seems just like another positive influence that has worked well with this group.
Yeah. DeMarcus is interesting because he's not as familiar with what the Clippers do on the floor. You know, he is, like you mentioned, familiar with some of the players on the team. You know, he's had an Olympic experience with Paul George. He's been on three other teams prior to this one with Rajon Rondo. Rondo really likes him. He's been a mentor to him. There's a real love there. And that doesn't even speak of someone like Patrick Patterson, who a lot of people, myself included, thought that DeMarcus Cousins getting on the roster on a 10-day contract, two 10-day contracts now, was going to be a means of not having Patrick Patterson play as much. And not only has Patrick Patterson arguably played more, but he's shown some things that we hadn't seen prior to DeMarcus's addition to the roster. I mean, dude is dunking, hitting multiple threes in games, playing for damn near 20 minutes at pop. I mean, it's still not ideal. You'd rather have Serge Ibaka out there. And it's another reminder that the facsimile that is DeMarcus Cousins is not going to be a significant on-court factor. But it does say that, again, guys play better when they want to be on, you know, when they have some rejuvenation, you know, when they have that encouragement. And Boogie has made a positive impact, I think, in his short time with the team. We'll see if that is going to be brought into the playoffs. Again, you just have to temper your expectations. Boogie's physically, he's never going to get there. But yeah, in terms of the locker room, in terms of, you know, a couple minutes at a time, depending on a certain matchup, he hasn't been a net loss, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. Anytime you sign someone on a 10-day, yeah, the expectations probably aren't that high, but you know, as you said, if you can contribute in little ways like that, that's helpful. Relaxing is tough. With life being crazy, it's just hard to shut off your brain and chill. You overthink, you can get easily stressed out. It sucks. So I did the homework for you and found out that Sunday Scaries, which are delicious vitamin-boosted CBD gummies, are the perfect solution. They become a must-have in your daily routine, and they can chill you out in just about 20 minutes. Basically, they help take the edge off so you can maintain your composure and live scare-free. And there's no risk to buy. The company offers a 100% lifetime money-back guarantee. If the product's not for you, that's okay. You'll get your money back. Sunday Scaries is in the stress-relieving business, not the stress-causing business. I got you 25% off to prove it. Visit SundayScaries.com and use my promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your discount. That's promo code BELIEVE for 25% off at SundayScaries.com. They're effing amazing, and you won't regret joining their squad. We've all had bad experiences with sunglasses. Some that break, some that are cheap, that don't hold up over time. It's time to make your outdoor experiences better with Kanon. Kanon sunglasses are made exclusively with polarized lenses for optimal clarity. They're made with Japanese optics that make their lenses clearer, lighter, stronger, and Italian handcrafted frames that are impossible to scratch. Use the exclusive code K9CAST15 at K9.com to receive 15% off your first pair. That's K-A-E-N-O-N-C-A-S-T-1-5. K9, clearly better. something that I wanted to ask you about, of course, the trade at the trade deadline, Lou Williams, who was, you know, fan favorite, obviously a great presence with the Clippers, both on and off the court, you know, traded for Rondo, who has been hugely positive for the team as well. Just what were your overall impressions of that trade when it happened and just kind of the results that we've seen from the Clippers and how well Rondo has fit in?
That was tough. I try to take emotions out of this thing, man, but like I'm a big Lou Williams fan. You know, I always talk about the fact that we went to we were the same high school class, 2005. You know, I played high school basketball, so I was very familiar with who was high up in the rankings. You know, I was very much unranked, so I'm not here to gas myself up. It's just to apply a association with Lou. I've been familiar with Lou ever since he was drafted. Well, not even before he was drafted, and he was drafted to my hometown team. He was drafted to play for the Philadelphia 76ers. So everybody that I grew up with playing basketball was familiar with Lou, not only before he got drafted, but then he gets drafted to a situation where he's playing with the Sixers. That's, you know, it's like, well, even before I knew what I was going to be doing with my life, like I knew about Lou Williams. And then he stayed in Philadelphia for so long. He developed under Allen Iverson and played on some good teams, played on some bad teams, played on some fun teams. And like his last game with the Sixers was a game 7, ironically, against the Boston Celtics and Rajon Rondo, you know, like it's just crazy how those dudes wound up getting traded for each other. Like they tore their ACLs the same year, came back, and, you know, Rondo has had this career where like a lot of people thought he'd be a career Celtic. Now he's a guy who is like a basketball mercenary. He just shows up and makes teams other than the Dallas Mavericks somewhat better. That's the one outlier. But I mean, other than that, it's been for the last 5 years, people have appreciated what he's able to do as far as elevating a team's performance. That's the one thing that I thought when this trade was made, because I thought that they were downgrading in talent, but I did recognize that they weren't going to trade Lou unless it was going to be for a guy that made everyone feel better about themselves going into the playoffs, because that's what this season is about. This season wasn't about the past. Even the only part of the past that mattered was last year's disappointment. And what do you do with that? Well, you balance the roster, and that's what this trade did. They felt like they had enough scores. Lou as a scorer was not as effective as previous years. You can see that in his free throw rate, you know. Now, you don't bring Rajon Rondo in to replace Lou Williams. You bring Rajon Rondo in as insurance for the point guard position, another guy who can handle the ball, but also someone who the coaching staff can feel better about, the star players can feel better about. And that's what it and that's what it did. Reggie Jackson is a Lou Williams replacement. You want a guy who's going to replace that scoring? You basically tell Reggie, look, we're not asking you to pretend like you're this pass first point guard. Like, we need you to get buckets. And that's what Reggie's done. Reggie's had more 20 point games this season than Lou has. So when you think of it in that context, I think you have to move a bunch of goalposts, and that doesn't, I don't like doing that, to be honest with you. But if you understand what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish, hey, the Rondo trades worked out so far, and they didn't even get him for the regular season. They got him for the postseason. So a lot of it is to be determined anyway.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way as you. And, you know, Alex and I talked about it on previous episodes as well, where, you know, the impact we thought Rondo could have, we were both, you know, pretty high on what he could bring. But at the same time, it did feel like a little bit of a gut punch. It was bittersweet because of how much, you know, we love Lou Williams and what he brought to the team. And I think most of, you know, Clipper fans and Clipper Nation feels that way as well.
Yeah, Lou is a guy who wanted to be with this franchise. I said when he got traded, it's like, you know, he wanted the smoke that came with whatever rivalry. I hate the Clippers-Lakers rivalry. It's BS to me, to be honest with you. But it's a real rivalry. You know, people who care about both of those teams or one of those teams, they're going to play up and be sensitive to the other. And Lou felt that when he got here and was like, we're the better team, you know. And then he played like it, you know, for the most part. Like Lou's a part of a lot of wins over the Lakers. He used to be a member of the Lakers, so he understood what was going on. He had more success, you know, as far as wins and losses with the Clippers than he did with the Lakers, you know. So The veterans respected him. The league respects him. I can't tell you how many times guys in the middle of a game would come up to Lou and be like, yo, I love watching you play growing up, and now I'm playing against you. You know, Manuel quickly comes to mind right away.
Yep.
But, you know, I think Devontae Graham with the Charlotte Hornets, you know, like these are, you know, good young players, and they're like standing in the middle of a season, you know, of a guy that they are just playing against. That's how you kind of felt with Lou. Like, there are people, veterans, Marcus Morris, he's been in the league. He's been on so many teams for a significant amount of time. And he talked about how much of an influence Lou had. So you don't feel good about downgrading in talent as far as a one for one and saying, oh, we did this for basketball IQ reasons, or we did this for locker room reasons. You have to kind of, it's not apples to apples. That's just what it is. You lose a great player and a respected person in Lou, or a guy who was a leader, but you're gaining a guy who has a resume that speaks for itself, and a guy who's going to absolutely command respect in Rajon. It's, you just have to be like, look, it's a great loss and hopefully a great game. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, so far so good, obviously, with what Rondo has been able to bring. You know, looking at the standings right now, the Clippers pretty firmly in that three spot. They're within range of Phoenix and even Utah, 3.5 back of the one. Do you think the Clippers care where they end up in the seeding? Do they have a preferred matchup when it comes to the playoffs, or, you know, any impressions on how they feel going into the downstretch of the season?
As of right now, I don't think they care about seeding at all. They have been extremely conservative about who's playing and when they're playing. And I mean, I didn't mention Paul George dealing with the toe issue, which was a concern when this month started, because he had missed games. He didn't play very well at all against the Denver Nuggets when they visited LA, but he's been on a tear ever since. So with the Clippers, I think for them, they have the right attitude of, who are you trying to avoid? You're trying to win a championship. That means you need to end three Western Conference team seasons and then end the season of the team that makes it out of the Eastern Conference, the opposite conference. Like, who cares at this point where that journey starts? You're going to have to show that you're the best team. You know, they've shown that they can beat every single team in the West that they might have to play anyway. You know, some of those teams haven't even beaten the Clippers yet. The Lakers, they haven't beaten the Clippers this season. The Blazers, they haven't beaten the Clippers this season. The Phoenix Suns, they have not beaten the Clippers this season. So it doesn't – seeding, no, it doesn't matter. If you're the three, the two, God forbid the one, you know. I mean, sure, it would be great to move up, but at the same time, it's like all of these teams could probably beat you too. You know, they learned last year. It doesn't really take much. You need to run through the tape. So I think the Clippers, their priority is, there, you know, they're going to make the playoffs. They might win 40 games before they lose 20. We'll see what happens Sunday night against the Minnesota Timberwolves, their first game with fans. Their priority is get the luck of the draw, have guys healthy, and wherever this thing starts, just take care of what's in front of you from there.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things you mentioned there that I wanted to touch on as well. Of course, Paul George with the bone edema issue in his toe, as you mentioned, it seemed like it was really affecting him adversely for a while. And, you know, he's talked about the mindset shift that he's had and just the tear that he's been on lately, you know, managing a really tough injury, but being able to play through it. It seems like he's kind of hit his stride with it. What have you seen with him that's been able to, you know, have success despite still playing with this toe injury?
I think a lot of Paul George's production comes from mental toughness and being able to stay in rhythm and in a zone. Again, these games, he's played some of them with Kawhi, some of them without Kawhi. A lot of the times with Paul, he will settle and he'll disappear. He'll get a little one-dimensional. That's when he's at his worst, when he's focusing on the contact and not finishing through contact. And he's been sensitive to the lack of whistles this year. It's been the case for most of his career. Probably the outlier was his MVP year. But even that year, he wasn't the same player because of the shoulder issue. Last year, you could understand Paul wasn't looking for contact like that. He was absolutely playing to the sensitivity of coming off of shoulder surgery. This year, he has determined that, especially in the last week or so, if he's going to be on the floor, he needs to just play through whatever might be coming up. And he's been more aggressive. I've seen him dunk. I like it when guys dunk, because when you're dunking, your legs have that extra juice. You have that explosion. You have that will to go and finish regardless of who's coming. That has made an impact. His shooting, I mean, he's had an elite shooting season. I think people forget that when Paul George came into the league, he wasn't a shooter. If he was a shooter coming out of Fresno State, he would have been a top five pick. The Clippers might have drafted him over Al-Farouq Aminu, something like that. No, he was not a shooter at Fresno State. He shot sub 30% from three his rookie year with the Indiana Pacers. It's amazing how he's a ratchet now, you know, and he's still in a position where he's making plays for his teammates. So the ball is in his hands a lot. He's got to produce, and he's got to do it a lot. And I think it's helped him that he's just gotten over it. You know, I think that's a scary thing. You're wondering, oh, I can't bend my toe, or I can't flex, I can't push off when you're dealing with that. But I think the Clippers have done a good job of helping him get on the floor. He's not going to play in back-to-backs probably for the rest of the season. And he's on a roll, and hopefully he can continue that, because, yeah, everyone wants to see him do it in the playoffs. But you know what? A lot of people don't wait for the playoffs to clown him. So the fact that he's playing well, it's like, keep that same energy. You know, he's playing really well. Hopefully he can continue on. There's a lot of people who wish failure on him, and they want him to fail in the playoffs because it'll get their clicks up. So hopefully he can continue playing well going into the playoffs, and he can have success in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, no, we've seen that plenty all over social media. Like you said, it's, you know, quiet when he has a Western Conference Player of the Week like he's had and drops 30 in five straight games. But if he misses a layup or something, then it's all over the place. So, you know, tough for him in that regard, but he's been absolutely incredible lately. You mentioned also the return of fans, which will be happening for the Sunday night game against the Timberwolves. We know a lot of teams in the league have had some limited fans in some aspect, you know, around 2,000, 3,000 fans. This will be, of course, the first time the Clippers will feel it for a home crowd. How much of a boost do you think that can give them just going down the backstretch of the season and then into the playoffs of having fans back in the building?
The crazy thing is they don't have a lot of home games left. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's six left. That's the craziest thing about it. I just talked about the 9-game homestand and what that meant and how rare that is. You look at the schedule and be like, oh, what a great logistical advantage. They did not get days off during that homestand, for one. The only time during that homestand where they had back-to-back days without a game was leading into the Lakers Easter game. And even that game was early. And you know, during this season, when it comes to logistics, when you have an early game, that means your testing schedule the day before, you don't get the same kind of rest. You don't get the same kind of sleep. So it was almost like you had only 1.5 days off instead of two. You have to play an early game. That's the case for both teams. But again, for a certain team like the Clippers, like, that rest is a factor when you don't have that break in the schedule. So now you come to the back end here and you don't have many home games. They have literally one stretch left where they have consecutive home games. But players have spoken about the energy that comes from a crowd that cheers for you, because they've played in front of crowds all, you know, for parts of this season, and in an increasing manner, because more and more teams have opened the building up to a limited number of fans. Those chants, they're not cheering for the Clippers. So perhaps now they get a little bit of that energy. You never know what's going to happen. And it's good progress for the country, for the municipality. That's good for them. And then it's about the playoffs. Home court advantage meaning something. And so it's good that they're going to have fans. I think the players are going to get a boost from it. But ultimately, the game is played on the floor. So whatever boost that they get from fans is great. But don't have fans and get smacked on your first night back, you know? Like, if you're gonna be happy that fans are in the building, cool. Well, play like it. So that remains to be seen too.
Yeah, bring the energy, especially against, you know, a Timberwolves team that obviously at the bottom of the league, but you know, they've got a couple of their key players back. So yeah, got to bring.
They played much better
with D'Angelo back.
Exactly. When they made the D'Angelo Russell trade and gave up a prime opportunity for a lottery pick possibly, because they wanted to pair Russell and Towns together. They've only been able to do that for, not, I don't, I think Sunday night would be the 10th game in that circumstance. And they have a winning record going in when those two guys play together. It's almost like when a roster has ideal circumstances, the team play better. So,
what a concept, right?
Exactly. Yeah, like respect the game, right? Respect the game. Anybody can beat you if you think that you take an off night. You can get smacked by anybody in this league. These guys are pros. That's why, even though people say, well, teams aren't playing enough or there's too many games and it's too sensitive, it's like, no, the Clippers have done this well because they have pros on their roster. Every team should, but every team doesn't have that, you know, but any team can beat you. So you still need to respect the game and don't look at a team's record. Look at the ability that a team can play against you, and you need to match that and play your game as well.
Yeah, and I know it's tough when you're not able to be around the team as much with just the circumstances of the pandemic. But any indication, we know the Clippers are tight-lipped as well. But Kawhi Leonard, we know they've been cautious with him with that sore right foot. Listed as questionable going into that Timberwolves game. Any indication of if he'll be back for that, or if not, when he'll be back on the floor and back to his usual dominant self?
I thought that he was going to play Friday, and they decided to hold him out in Philadelphia. He was on the trip, and it's always good when a guy travels, even though he's not 100%. But, you know, he didn't play. So anything could happen with Kawhi, I guess. And you don't really like seeing a guy listed with a particular injury for an extended period of time. But I also think the Clippers kind of had a plan as to what they're going to do. They're not overly concerned. It's not like the words that I look for are like setback and not traveling and not practicing. Yeah. I don't think that's really been the case. Not that they've had days to practice anyway. Again, they're on a stretch here where they've been playing every other day, sometimes back-to-back days. So they don't get back-to-back days off until after Sunday against the Timberwolves, after a back-to-back, which includes a trip to Portland, which is also one of the underrated toughest trips in the league. Playing a back-to-back with a visit to Portland as part of it. They have to play a game in Houston, a typical trap game, because it'll be their third game in four nights. Then they get back-to-back days off. Then we'll see what things are going to look like as far as how guys are resting, who's available, even who's on the roster. They've got multiple 10-day contracts right now. So when it comes to Kawhi, again, these games don't matter. Next month's games matter. So they can be conservative as they want. They've shown they can win with him and without him. I'm not really concerned about Kawhi right now. We'll see how that develops over the next week.
Yeah, and as we said, it's kind of been the theme for not only the Clippers, but all teams this season with health. It'll obviously be determined when he comes back. But another guy who record-wise has been so instrumental for the Clippers is Patrick Beverley, who, of course, returned from an extended absence, broke his hand in his first game or second game back, and he's out for another month or so. Just in terms of getting him back and what kind of minutes he can play going into the playoffs, where it'll be kind of right up against that. What do you see with his return with other guys like Reggie Jackson and Rondo playing so well with, when Beverley gets back into the fold?
We got what we needed to see when Beverley came back for those two games. Those are two big games that he played in terms of coming back from the right knee soreness that he's been dealing with, not just all season, but people remember that he missed most of his first season with the Clippers after major right knee surgery. Yes, the two are related. So managing that particular ailment is a priority. And this fracture of his hand is actually, there's a silver lining. I've always felt like there's a silver lining with Anthony Davis and LeBron James missing time now. A lot of people be like, oh, they're missing time. Like, number one, you get guys who are stepping up and playing roles, playing important roles, and establishing the level of defense that the Lakers have. Like, I'll give the Lakers some credit there. And a lot of people want to focus on injuries, but those guys aren't dealing with season-ending injuries. They'll both be back, and they're both getting rest in terms of missed games, where they'll probably look raggedy when they come back, but it'll be like the seeding games. A lot of people thought of the Lakers going into last year's playoffs as and look at how bad they were in the seeding games and were like, oh, great, this is going to bleed into the opening round of the playoffs against the Blazers. They dropped one game and then they pretty much handled their business from there. You know, like LeBron and AD are going to be rested relative to how if they didn't get injured and were going to play all of these games and all these minutes, things would be different. So look at Patrick Beverley in that perspective. He has an injury where he possibly could still keep his conditioning. He's not going to, you're not concerned about the knee flaring up when he's dealing with a hand injury and not playing in games. That's going to be a factor. What we saw from him against the Trailblazers and against the Suns is that he's going to start and he's probably not going to finish games, but he starts so that you establish a defensive mentality. Rajon Rondo is his direct backup, and he's going to come in and maybe close games, and he's going to fill in things with the second unit, and he might end first halves as well as the close games that might come up for the Clippers down the stretch. And then you have Reggie, who I don't consider him a point guard when Beverly and Rondo are available. Reggie is a shooting guard. He's there to be like the sixth man, the scorer. He's going to play a lot of his minutes with Rajon Rondo. And obviously, who's the point guard in that circumstance? Who's going to be facilitating things? It's going to be Rajon Rondo, right? So the quote-unquote point guard rotation, depth chart, however you want to call it, however it lays out, that's kind of how it's going to be. They need Beverly because Beverly is a great shooter, not a good shooter, a great shooter, 40% consistently, not just this year, but in previous years. Offensively and then defensively, you know what he gives you. He's going to guard often. He's not the event kind of defender that he used to be as far as steals and whatnot, but he blocks shots. He blocks jump shots. It's hard to do for a point guard. He blocks shots. He gets into the bodies of some of the best scorers in the league from the point guard position. He can guard up positions, and he challenges on the boards. He's an incredibly valuable player. The Clippers are a better team with him, and they don't need him to play 25, 30 minutes. He can do his thing, make an impact in 20 minutes, and they have the pieces where, you know, it just balances the rest of the roster out. He's a tough player to replace, so hopefully he's back before the playoffs.
Yeah, no question. Obviously, the record reflects with just how important he's been to the team. La, before I let you go, I just want to, you know, ask about how the season has been for you. Obviously, it's been a difficult one in terms of the pandemic and adjusting and a lot of, you know, a lot of these Zoom type press conferences and calls. Just what has this been like, this year been like for you covering the Clippers and seeing this team?
It's been a blessing. I can't thank The Athletic enough for seeing something in me to put me in this position. I was at ESPN for a long time. Before I was at ESPN full time, I was covering the Clippers then. So I know what it's like to cover shoot arounds, cover practices, be in the building, be in the locker room, stuff like that. That role decreased over my time at ESPN, which was always it was always disheartening, to be honest with you, because I felt like I was building something, even in my early days where I was encouraged to be around. Shout out to Chad Millman, who's at the Action Network. Like, he encouraged me when I got there. It's like, hey, you understand the NBA. You've been in locker rooms. You know how to cover this league. Like, that's an asset. So I'm thankful for the people who brought me on to ESPN and gave me an opportunity to encourage me to do more instead of to do less, instead of put me in the box in a role. And now The Athletic, they saw my experience and was like, look, this is the Zoom era, but you can still do a lot with it. This is a great opportunity right now. It'll be a great opportunity when we get back on the road. I'm talking not just me, but media in general, get back on the road, traveling, seeing the country, seeing the United States, seeing this league, getting that perspective that comes with being outside of your bubble, if you will. So it's been tough. I'm not going to be at the Sunday night's home game against the Timberwolves. I haven't gotten my first shot yet. The process of getting a negative test is a little more complicated than that. It's just a little too much right now. I'll get there. And so I'm excited to get vaccinated. I'm excited to just continue the progress of getting this country back, opening up and everything, being safe about it. And I got a lot to look forward to. So it's been a very unique and interesting season. There's a lot of opportunities to make the most of it. And that's really what I've been focusing on.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, from all Clipper fans out there, we appreciate what you've done this year, covering the team. You do a great job, and we're thankful for that and looking forward to much more coverage for hopefully a long run into the playoffs for the Clippers.
Hey, absolutely. We'll see what happens. I'll be here for whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for coming on, and yeah, we'll catch up down the line.
All right. Thank you, Jesse.
So that will do it for this week's edition of the Believe in Clippers podcast. Once again, a huge thank you to Law Murray of The Athletic for coming on the show. Of course, if you're not subscribed to The Athletic, you're missing a lot of great content from Law over there. So be sure to check it out on The Athletic and follow him on Twitter, where he's always giving great updates on all the latest Clippers news. So again, a big shout out to Law for coming on the show. And of course, thank you to everyone out there for listening. As always, we always appreciate it. As you heard at the top of the show, you can find the show wherever you get your podcasts, and of course, at Believe.com. So with all that said, we'll talk to you again next week on the Believe Podcast Network, LA's number one sports podcast network, and the only place to show with every team in LA and more. We believe in our LA teams. Do you believe? Go Clips.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.